All right, that means it's time now to welcome Dr. Renee Boyce and the rest of her guests to the airwaves as we bring you the Better Health Radio Show. Very good evening to you, Doctor. How are you doing?
Hi, good evening, Bryston. I'm doing well, thank you. How are you doing?
Me, I'm on top of the world today.
Ah.
Yeah, feeling good today, yes.
Good to hear.
Good, good, good.
Wonderful. Well, everybody, welcome to the Better Health Radio Show, helping you to live your best life. This evening, as per every other show, we have some wonderful information for you, some very exciting guests. And if you want to reach Greston over there in the studio all by himself, 434-1790. And if you want to send a WhatsApp, 266-4862. So we welcome your calls. We welcome your WhatsApps, as we have our discussion today. With me this evening, I have two guests, but before I introduce my guests, two matters of housekeeping. Firstly, there are still a few outstanding prizes from the Better Health Radio Show end of year quiz. Simply due to a matter of logistics from the shutdowns and lockdowns and the businesses only opening partially and so on. Nevertheless, as soon as is humanly possible to get that sorted out, I reassure those persons who haven't gotten their prizes as yet, you will get them. They're still valid, so don't worry. And I apologize for the delay. Again, it's no fault of Starcom, and it simply is just a matter of logistics and our current circumstances. So that's the first piece of housekeeping. Secondly, I want to say a very special good evening to Julianne Cumberbatch. Julianne is somebody I met over social media, and she says that she is an avid listener, so she doesn't miss a show if she can help it. So special good evening to you, Julianne, and thank you for tuning in. I'm sure you're tuning in this evening. I'll find that out later. Hope that you have heard your shout out. So now let's get on to our show, because we have lots of information. There's a lot of ground to be covered, and I'm sure you are going to enjoy today's show. With me this evening, I have Dr. Courtney Yarbrough. You would have heard, if you listened to the show last week, Dr. Yarbrough, as we were discussing polycystic ovarian syndrome. Good evening, Dr. Yarbrough.
Good evening. Thank you for having me again.
Yes, and thank you for being so willing to be here again. I think one of the things that I am most happy about with the Better Health Radio Show is that when I make contact with either the professionals who come on or the patients or participants, they usually say hello. And the reason I hesitated is that my dog has decided to start barking. Maybe he wants to be on the Better Health Radio Show. So let's say a special hello to Robin as well. Robin McMaynard Noah Boyce. Yes, that's his full name.
Really? No.
And they've all said, yes. Compliments of the children. The dog is called Robin McMaynard Noah Boyce. No comments, Greston?
Oh, no. Go ahead. I was here playing your personal secretary as it was giving us information that somebody wanted on you. So go ahead, Doc.
Oh, okay. Well, thank you very much to the secretary over there. So I was saying that the persons who come on the show are the vast majority of them so very willing. And you've heard that we've had repeat participants. And it just goes to show that they really are interested in the welfare of our population. So thanks again, Dr. Yarbrough. And then our second guest this evening is Ms. Dawn Williams. Hello, Dawn.
Hi, good evening.
And again, Dawn is one of those persons I made contact with, and she was like, yes, I am willing. I am going to be there. So thank you so very much, Dawn. This evening's topic is going to be endometriosis. And one of the reasons is that March is the month of endometriosis. And certainly, if you put two and two together, then more than likely you would start to say perhaps Dawn has endometriosis. But we will find out all of those things as we go along over the next hour. So Dawn, tell us a little bit about who is Dawn Williams.
Okay, so good evening to everyone. I am a small business owner in Barbados. So I am an accountant by profession. I also do suffer with endometriosis as well as another chronic condition. I am also the co-founder of the Barbados Association of Endometriosis and PCOS. So shout outs to Julia Mandeville, who is also my co-founder, and shout outs to all of the officers and all the trustees that are listening in right now, and all of the members as well.
Thank you. And a special good evening to all those persons who themselves have been diagnosed with endometriosis. And we will get a picture into the life of a patient who suffers with endometriosis. But first, we go over to Dr. Yarbrough. And what's the definition, Dr. Yarbrough, of endometriosis?
Okay, good evening, everyone, again. Endometriosis, the technical definition is that the internal lining, the lining that we normally would menstruate from every month, that internal lining, there are cells just like those that are growing on the outside of the uterus, inside the abdomen or the tummy. So you have those same type of endometrial cells that are growing either on the outside of the uterus, can be growing on the ovarian tissue, on the tissues that line the abdomen and the stomach and all the organs inside. And that is technically the definition of endometriosis. And that can cause several different sequelae, which we can go into in a few minutes.
Okay, so Don, we go back to you. What made you go to the doctor?
Okay, so this dates back to my days at the University of the West Indies. So that was around 2000 and between 2002 and 2005, because those are the years I was there. I would have, at that point, been suffering from a lot of pain every month with my period, and pain such that sometimes, well, in school, I would be in the sick bay a lot. I would have to lie down and for like most of the day. Sometimes I would actually miss school at that time. And when I got to the university, it kind of got worse. So there was a point in time where I was in front of a class giving a group presentation or being part of a group presentation and fainted because of the pain. Like I was in that much pain. I was trying to hold it together. It didn't quite work out. And so I fainted in front of everyone. And so from there, luckily there was a nurse in the class that I was delivering to. So she attended to me first, and then I was referred to the school's physician. And from there, then I was also then referred to a gynecologist who works along with the university. And from then I was diagnosed with having an ovarian cyst at that point. Mm-hmm. So that's what first led me to kind of seek out, because after that, it was a series of monthly ovarian cysts. I had a problem where my ovarian cysts would not always go away how they're supposed to resolve on their own. They would stay there and build up over time and that kind of thing. And that caused significant pain. A lot of bleeding, like heavy bleeding and clotting. And over time then it was just that I just wanted to know what was going on. Why was I getting these recurring cysts? And so at one point in time, I was referred to a specialist gynecologist, Dr. Thomas, and he's the person then that would have mentioned the possibility of endometriosis. Told me that basically the only way to definitively diagnose it was via a laparoscopy surgery. And so that's how I was diagnosed in 2006.
2006. We are in 2021. So we're looking at, hear me trying to add in front of the accountant.
Don't ask me either. I'm off just
that's about 15 years. Yeah, I know accountants use calculators. That's about 15 years. So Dr. Yarbrough, let's talk about how the typical patient with endometriosis would present. And the reason I use the word typical in there is because no patient really is I don't want to say no patient is typical, but each patient is individual. I think that's a better way to put it. So yeah. How would a patient who has endometriosis, how would she feel or what would she present with?
Yes. So actually, Don actually paints the perfect picture of a patient where we would be highly suspicious of endometriosis. These patients will come in with severe pain. Most times it's during the period, but sometimes it can even be in between the periods. So the severity of the pain is the first clue. So severe pain that affects their daily activities. They can't go to school. They can't go to work. And then they may have associated symptoms such as nausea or vomiting or diarrhea. So the pain level that significantly affects their life, and they can't, and no pain medicines help, or they only help a little bit. So in a patient that comes in with complaints that they're having severe pain with every period, and they have a family history of somebody in their family, their mother, their sister, their aunts also have the same history, then we're going to think first thing first is going to be endometriosis. But she is correct. The only way that we can definitively diagnose endometriosis is through surgery so that we can look inside to see it and get a biopsy sample as well.
Two things to mention here. The classic history that was given by both you and Don, you know, corroborating the story. I remember when I was in secondary school eons ago that there was a young lady, and we didn't understand it. We didn't understand why she would be bawling every month. And I remember distinctly she was fair-skinned, so she was turning red. Yeah. And the guys would have to lift her downstairs to the sick bay and so on. And this would happen every month for the majority of her school career. But back in that time, nobody really knew about endometriosis. And this brings us back to something that you said last month, Courtney, last week, that it's not normal. It's not normal to be having severe pain like this. But because it happens to women every month, they think that it's, oh, this is just me. And so this is something that I have to endure. So we go back over to Dawn, and let's talk a little bit about medications. And then we'll talk about the diagnosis via laparoscopy again. Did any of the medication that you get, Dawn, help in any way?
Short answer, no. So I got quite a bit of medication in my lifetime. And I think before the diagnosis, no, I don't think anything really would have helped. So every month it was just getting worse and worse and worse and worse. And yeah, I was passing out a lot more frequently. And just having really, really, really bad pain and not being able to understand what is going on. And then back to something that you just said, Dr. Boyce, in terms of when I was going to school, I actually thought it was quite normal because all the other girls in my class were having pain. It's just that maybe I was not aware of the severity of theirs as compared to mine. So like some of them, yes, they would be in the sick bay with me on a monthly basis or whatever, but clearly there was a disparity between the pain that I was getting and the pain that they were getting. But in terms of the medication, not much would have worked.
Yeah, the World Health Organization, they gave a definition of health which says that being healthy isn't just the absence of a disease, but it speaks about social well-being and mental well-being and so on. Let's talk a little bit about your quality of life in those formative years up to about University of the West Indies. Certainly you realize a difference between you and the other girls in your class. How did this monthly burden, because essentially that's what it is, it is a burden. How did this monthly burden impact on your social well-being, you being outgoing or not outgoing and so on and so forth?
Well, if I can cast my mind back. So after a while, like Dr. Yerber said, it got more frequent than just with the period. So it got, I used to get pain like almost every day. I think there was at that point in time, there was like 1 week where I would have like very little to no pain. But that was like in like maybe a week before or 2 weeks before the period would start. So it would be really bad during the period, probably the week after that. And then like I have a week in between there, and then it would start all over again. And then also too, at that point in time, so I was having very infrequent, in terms of the consistency of the period was not, it was not predictable. So, you know how some women would be able to count, like, you know, like every 28 days or every 30 days, I'd have my period. I would not be able to do that. So like sometimes I would get a period that lasted 7 days, and then that would finish. And then another period would start maybe 14 days later, and that would last for 14 days, and then that would stop. And then it would go maybe like 28 days before a period, and then it would get another period for like 30 days. And like I have had like really long, really long periods. So yeah, it was kind of unpredictable, and therefore like I had to kind of navigate my life around that. So like there were, like, for example, being that I was going to BCC and UE at the time and that kind of stuff, I used to have to walk with sweaters all the time, just so that in case something happened, I can just wrap it around myself and just, you know, like call my dad or something to come for me. I have had some actual accidents at school where I was not prepared. Mm-hmm. And yeah, it was not pleasant at all. Thank God though that I actually from early I had some really good friends that would, you know, so like when I was in those kind of situations, now you would see like the friends would form like a little circle around you, and they would kind of walk, you know, or like somebody would like try to get a sweater from somebody else or something like that. Yeah, so it was hectic. And then because of school, I found that a lot of the time I was home from school. I used to mostly study at home. So for want of a better word, I used to skip school a lot and basically home teach myself through the most of BCC and UE days. Mm-hmm. So that's kind of how I had to navigate it. There were some times when I had to say no to certain outings or certain invitations and that kind of stuff. That got worse after UE. But yeah, that's kind of how those kind of years would have happened.
All right, let's take a look into the technical aspect of diagnosing. I remember reading an article, Dr. Yarbrough, that had said that when you do the laparoscopy, and you can explain for the listeners, but sometimes the number of endometrial deposits that are seen, that doesn't correlate with the severity of the illness. And sometimes doctors might be inclined to think if only a few deposits are seen that, you know, the patient might just be exaggerating. And I'm sure you experienced this, Dawn, where people thought that you were just faking and being the most, as opposed to genuinely being in severe pain. So describe for the listeners, Dr. Yarbrough, just a little bit about the process of laparoscopy, because there might be somebody out there who's a bit hesitant about having it done.
Right. So you are correct. The endometriosis can almost look any kind of way. So again, like we said before, you must do the laparoscopy to diagnose it. And what that entails is a small, tiny incision just underneath the belly button. And that's where we put the camera. So it's a camera we put inside your tummy. And then we fill your tummy up with what we call CO2 gas. And that will expand everything so we can have a really good view. And then we may put one or two other small incisions at the lower part of your tummies on both sides so that we can kind of manipulate and move things around so we can get a good look. We want to look underneath your womb, your uterus. We want to look on top of it, to the side, look all around the ovaries to see if there are any deposits, because sometimes we go in there and, oh yeah, it's obvious. There's a lot of deposits in there. I mean, things are stuck together. The organs are adhesed together. And sometimes it's really, really obvious. Other times we have to search. And the reason for that is because the deposits can be, they can differ. We found that in younger women, the endometriosis deposits actually are lighter in color. So they can actually be clear or red. So the clear ones are really hard to see. You have to really see them, be very close to that surface to see them. And they can be red dots as well. It may just be a few, like you mentioned. And those women can be in severe agonizing pain. What people have to realize is that when you're menstruating, those cells are also releasing fluid. So that fluid that's being released during your period is what's causing the irritation and the pain inside the abdominal cavity. So for those women who go in there, we see those clear and red deposits, they tend to be the most active, so the most painful. And then for some women, and usually it's the older women, when we go in there and go back in or have to do another cleaning to remove the deposits, those can be a little older, so they can be brown in color or a dark red. So it just depends on the person. I mean, there's no reason why it occurs in one person or another. There's no reason why some people may have smaller deposits and others have a lot more. There's no real reason. The only reason is that it's their genetic makeup. And the way their bodies react to those deposits and the fluid release is also the genetic makeup. Because we've also gone in for women who've had no symptoms whatsoever. They're having surgery for some other reason, whether it be an ovarian cyst or infertility, which we should discuss as well during this talk, or for some other reason, and they have deposits of endometriosis everywhere. And they've had no symptoms other than the fact that they had difficulty getting pregnant.
Okay, so you want to discuss the infertility now, or you want to do that a little bit later?
Well, we can discuss it now since I brought it up, so people can understand what I mean by that. So one of the things we look for women who are having difficulty in getting pregnant, one of the first things we do is what's called an HSG, which is called hysterosalpingogram. It's an ultrasound where we push fluid inside the uterine cavity to look at the shape of the inside of the cavity, but also importantly to see if the fallopian tubes are open, they're patent. And we can actually do the procedure during your laparoscopy as well while you're asleep. And the point of that, the importance of that is that sometimes the endometriosis can block the end of the tube, or it can be so much that's blocking the whole tube where the tube is not allowing the egg to be released inside the cavity. So it can that can be the cause of infertility for some women actually.
Okay, thank you very much for that explanation. Let's go back to Dawn, and you're sitting in the doctor's office describing perhaps your frustrations with this pain, and you are wondering what are your options. The discussion of hysterectomy comes up. What do you think about that as an option?
Well, fortunately for me, that actually never came up. and it's probably because when I first heard about the word endometriosis, like I was on crazy, like researching for myself to see like what is this, because that was the first time I ever heard of it, like in around 2005. That was the first time that I'd ever heard the word endometriosis. And so I went on this whole Google phase of like trying to find out what it was. And so then I found out fairly early that hysterectomy is not necessarily a cure for endometriosis. However, though, I know that it does, or it did give some women a couple of a modicum of relief from the pain that they were receiving before. So that really never came up initially. Actually, it was something that I brought up myself. I brought it up after, because I said that my laparoscopy was in 2006. I would have had 2 subsequent surgeries, so one in 2008 and one in 2009. The one in 2009 was actually a mistake. Because I was suspected of having appendicitis, and I was rushed to the hospital. Like, I didn't even get home that day. I went straight from the ultrasound to my doctor to the hospital. And my parents and whatever had to meet me there And it turned out afterwards that the appendix, while it was removed, there was nothing wrong with it. It was the endometriosis that was acting up on that side that was causing that amount of pain. And I guess it caused something to trigger the doctor to say, well, yes, you need to be admitted for emergency surgery. So after all of that time, so 2009 being number three surgery, and then like going up to 2014 is when I got the hysterectomy. 2014, I just was like, oh, enough is enough. Like I just want some relief at this point, right? Because nothing else was working. I was taking all sorts of different medications, some very painful injections, injections monthly, some that were causing some really, really bad side effects that I had to kind of stop mid-treatment. I was also taking like a lot of pills generally. And I mean, I tried almost everything else. I tried like acupuncture at one point. I never would have tried that before. but yeah, like I just wanted just to relieve the pain so much. And then like talking to women that had hysterectomies as a result of either endometriosis or some other form of pelvic disorder. And, you know, they're hearing their experiences is kind of what led me to my own decision in 2014. So that's really what I did in 2014, October, is when I had the hysterectomy. Unfortunately, though, it didn't lend to much relief for me. So while it probably did for some women, and like I said, every woman is different and everybody mm-hmm. is different and reacts to things different. Mine really didn't give me that much relief. Actually, it created additional problems afterwards. And so actually, while I'm speaking to you now, I'm actually gearing up for another surgery next month.
Okay, we'll talk about those one upcoming surgery in a couple of weeks' time. What I want to find out from you is talk to the listeners about the emotional roller coaster, as it was, you know, contemplating this hysterectomy. Because again, there is a woman out there, Dawn, who doesn't have any children, is in severe pain every month, and is faced with having to make this decision as to whether or not she should have this hysterectomy. Let's talk about how you were feeling during that time and what caused you to, you know, make that final decision. And we also want to talk about your family support.
Okay, Doc, before your guest answers that comment that you made, that question you made, let me just give you a comment from one of the listeners who's in support of the your guest. This WhatsApper says, good evening, doctor, and the young lady who I felt all of her pains. I am a sufferer of endometriosis as well. Was diagnosed in 2001, and I have been through pain like 365 days a year. I went through Depo, Provera, Dansol, Zolodex until 2011. When I had my daughter, it got better. Now, 10 years after, I am feeling different symptoms, and I also have four cysts at the moment, two ovarian, but I am coping well so far. I want to wish the young lady all the best. And she goes on to say, I only had a 28-day period when I got my daughter before. It was 30 days plus. So that's a comment from a WhatsApper there for you.